I mean, you know, Katie, I don't care what you say. I feel like Creative Edge Publicity Services, they just are the best. I mean, and I don't want to argue with you about it anymore.
I'm not making an argument. No.
You know, Creative Edge Publicity, they're just, I love those guys. They sponsor this show. They're the best. And Katie, if you have other opinions, you can just.
No, just see, here's my opinion. Here, you want it? You want my opinion?
Yes.
Are you ready? We're not worthy. We're not worthy.
Oh, well, welcome everyone. And you might have guessed, but this show is sponsored by Creative Edge Publicity Services.
Wow.
They're great. We really do love those guys.
They are very subtle.
So we have got a very... Oh, wait. Anita says she's not getting sound. Anita, are you getting sound now? Is anyone else getting sound? Everybody else? Anyone?
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
We can.
Someone out there, please tell us. Julia, Joe, Anita. Yes. Snark crew. All right. So we don't know if anyone can hear us, so I can just keep on talking. I mean, that's not really an issue. So we do kind of have a motley crew here tonight, and I commented when I first logged on that we have some amazing facial hair going on. I mean, Laura and Katie are just knocking it out of the park with these face do's. Yes. Oh, yes. I've never seen anything more beautiful, Katie. That's just perfect. And I did want to say quick hello again from Baby Yoda over here.
Say hello.
Yep, the child wants to say hello. So this crew tonight, I mean, there's some connections going on here. So who wants to introduce this crazy crew? I mean, I see that one of you has a doctor in front of your name. I don't know. Is that real? Is that doctor real?
Yeah.
Look at this guy, Dr. Bruce Olav Solheim.
So, yeah, I throw that in there just to, just to sell some books, you know.
Well, so tell us about your crew tonight. Tell us about the Snark crew.
Sure. The Snark comic book started in 1982 as a comic strip in the Montana Tech newspaper called The Technocrat. I was in engineering school in Butte, Montana.
Okay.
And I started a comic strip called Snark, but then it was spelled with a K then. I did five different comic strips in that newspaper, and then I flunked out of engineering school. So that was,
a doctor of engineering.
History. So anyway, it sat around, although I was thinking about it the whole time. And it originally came to me in a dream, actually, the name Snark and the whole, you know, this idea of an alien hybrid character coming to Earth and kind of being as Gary described him, kind of an innocent abroad, in this case, innocent on Earth, you know, not knowing what's going on here too much and learning. So anyway, it stuck in my mind. And then in January of 2019, my son, my second eldest son, made a bust of Snark. He found the old comic strip. I guess it was online somewhere or whatever. And he has a 3D printer. He is an engineer, by the way. So he ended up being the engineer. And he made a 3D head, you know, a bust of Snark. And that inspired me to bring the character back to life in a comic book, which is always what I wanted to do. And because I was already working with the Snark crew here on our other project, which is the Timeless Trinity, or the Timeless books, the trilogy, actually, I already had the crew assembled. So then it was a pretty easy sell. I just asked them, hey, let's do a Snark comic book. And Gary and Laura said yes, and George said yes, and off we went. So that's kind of how that started. Yeah. So those are the Timeless books. We've done two of those, and the third one comes out in March 1st. And Gary illustrated them, and Laura does the color, covers. And in the Snark comic book, Laura does the color throughout. And George is the editor and he's the expert on social media, advertising, and editing. He just does everything, you know, the really hard stuff. And well, except for the art, which is hard too. I do the easy stuff. I just come up with these harebrained ideas, do some writing here and there, and then yeah, that's what I do. But anyway, so that's how we came together for this particular project. So I have to say that Snark is 37 years in the making.
Wow. What a long time. My goodness.
Yeah.
That's almost as old as me. Holy cow.
And I still have those old Snark newspaper, the original series in the newspaper. It was actually kind of popular. That I think that's why I abandoned my engineering plans, because I thought, wow, people really like this. And but then I figured out you got to actually be passing your classes to be a student at the college. So my whole, you know, ability to do the comic strip went away when I flunked out.
Darn that fine print.
I know, exactly. I just want to stay here and, you know, do the comic strips. But anyway, so I'm a frustrated comic book artist, and I wanted to find somebody. I always wanted to work with somebody like Gary. And Gary has been doing these timeless books with me. And he actually did before that, he did a anti-textbook with me, a history anti-textbook called Making History. We did some comic book pages in there. And how I met Gary was that I had an old copy of American Splendor, which Gary was an integral part of, Harvey Pekar's very famous comic book from the 70s. And I was looking at it, and I was looking at the different artists, and I liked all of them. And of course, Robert Crumb is probably the most well-known, but you know, Mr. Natural and all that stuff, you know, that's Robert Crumb, kind of underground scene. But I really like Gary's style of art. I like the clean, I would say, I don't know if I can compare him to, I like Steve Ditko a lot from Marvel, early Marvel, like Spider-Man. I
just like realist. He does realistic.
Yeah, and it's just clean. It's very clean, and I just really like it. So I contacted Gary, and I said for this original project, which was the history anti-textbook. I call it an anti-textbook because it's not a corporate, you know, written textbook. It's just me telling my own personal stories and surrounding the narrative history of the United States with comic book pages. And so Gary liked it. He liked my approach, and he decided to do it. And then that led to the Timeless books and eventually to the Snark comic book.
Wow. All right, here's a question for you. And it might be a loaded question, but because most of us are book writers, and I think a lot of people in the audience are book writers, approaching a graphic novel is a totally different beast. Can you kind of walk us through a little bit of the process? Do you still write the story out as it were a novel and then try and break it down into the scenes for visual, or how does that work?
Yeah, Gary and Laura can talk a lot, and George can talk about that too. But, you know, this whole idea of sequential art is a unique art form, you know, whether it's a comic book, a floppy, as they call them, you know, like standard comic book or a graphic novel. Sequential art is a very unique way of telling a story. And as Harvey Pekar said, he said that you can do anything with words and pictures. And it's a very powerful way to tell a story. And I, you know, when I was working with Gary, I give him kind of rough sketches and sometimes even photographs and stuff with some of my, you know, just to kind of give him an idea of what I'm seeing in my head. And then the story just kind of flows from there. I kind of understand how sequential art works. So I think that helps in working with Gary, because I already kind of know how the panels work and stuff. Although, you know, he's the expert, and I always see what he takes my rough ideas and he makes it perfect. It's just, it's amazing. And but I think it does help that I have some idea of how, you know, sequential art works. But Gary and Laura can talk more to the,
please,
you
know, please do.
I think part of being a collaborative team is learning how to sort of read the other guy's mind. And Gary's very good at reading the author's mind, I think. I mean, I'll let you go more with that, but
the most important thing to me not in terms of collaboration, but the power of comics, whether they be the floppies or graphic novels, is the aspect of what I like to call making the connection between the right and the left brain, because words are left brain and pictures are right brain. And when you combine the two of them, you create a very strong mnemonic device. People remember things from comics or graphic novels that have been very thoroughly imprinted on their psyches. It's the same in a different way than movies. Yeah. Comics are, in essence, the way you break down a screenplay to create the movie.
A storyboard.
Okay.
Right.
A very sophisticated storyboard.
And I would also add to what Gary said, and I think he would acknowledge this too for himself, is that I struggled to learn how to read when I was a kid. And I always say comic books saved me, because I could put together the story. It helped me. It helped me develop my reading skills. And I'm kind of paying homage to the medium that got me to become literate. Actually, I was really struggling to learn how to read. And
my mother helped me to learn to read, not just with comic books, but by using comic books in exactly that way. When, if I can misquote the great Jack Kirby, who was a terrific comic book artist and storyteller, his idea was that you should be able to look at a comic book page and, without reading anything, be able to tell what's going on the page. Then when you read it, it makes it that much more powerful, or at least the best ones do.
Well, yeah. And I have a question about that too, because I don't read a lot of comics. I never have. I have a handful here at the house that I just thought were really cool. But I have a friend who writes comics, and his are all socio-politically driven. There's a lot of depth to them, which a lot of comic books have. But you really have to do a lot of reading. Like, there might be one page, might be a full bleed of one image with a lot of text on it, that I wouldn't have any idea what's going on without reading all of that. And it gets really deep into it. So this is a comic that I really have to pay a lot of attention to. But I noticed that most of the mainstream comics are not like that at all. Like you said, you can kind of follow along just with the images, which I think is kind of cool too.
One of the things I want to point out too, my son, who is in second grade now, he gravitates towards comic book style books. And his reading level is far beyond what his grade level is. And he loves to read because of these types of books. So I think it has a lot to do with it. So I agree with one of our commenters here. Lauren said that a big part of how her son learned to read was from comics. And I agree with that. My son really latched on to those style books, and he reads wonderfully above his level right now because of it.
I think Gary hit it right on the head there. It's using the left brain and the right brain. And there's something that's nice about that, because a lot of people are very left-brained, you know, and that's their primary, you know, just like left-handed and right-handed. So if you can find something that joins those, and a lot of libraries are really into the graphic novels, because that helps the younger teenage boys want to learn how to read. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Absolutely.
My son was the same way too. Christopher, he read a lot of I can't remember the names of the series, but one of them was Bones. And it was kind of like this cartoon bone figure. But he read tons and tons and tons of these, and he's extremely bright. I mean, his SAT scores were out of control. Mm-hmm. But that's all he read for years. He didn't want to read novels or anything else, but yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You know, it's Yeah, and I like the way you put that, the left and the right brain coming together like that. Yeah, that's really cool.
Which is interesting if you think about it, because if you go back to, let's say, children's books, like when we first start reading to our children, they are heavy picture books, you know, very good illustrations. And then as they get older, the images start to fall off, and you notice a lot of readers kind of lose interest at that age group when there's no more pictures in the book.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, I think there's definitely something to it. It really does activate both sides of the brain.
Well, I think there should be more pictures in just in regular novels, like especially when you get to the naughty parts. Add some pictures in there for me so I can really see what's going on.
Do you need instruction manual? Is that what you're saying, Jason? Fully illustrated.
I wanted to say, you know, with George being on the team, you know, as far as the literary part of it, you know, because, you know, the way we tell the story in Snark, you know, I kind of think of it like the old Rocky and Bullwinkle show, where you can read Snark as an adult and it's going to grab you in one way or another. You can read it as a 9-year-old and it's going to grab you. You can read it as a 16-year-old. It can be read at different levels. It's multifaceted. And, you know, that's one thing that George, I know when I first got him on board with Snark, he was really instrumental in this idea of presenting it that way. And he's a great editor. And of course, any author will tell you, and he's an author as well, will tell you that you can't do anything without your editor. You got to have a great editor. And that's why I'm so glad that we work with George. And he's a comic book guy too. He's totally on board with comic books. He's gone out there and beat the bushes in Seattle and he went to the Fantagraphics store. He went to all these other comic book stores. And that's what it takes. And he's a social media guy. He knows all that stuff that I didn't know how to do. So
I have carpal tunnel now.
How do you feel about all this pressure, George?
Well, it was definitely a learning experience. I didn't really get into comic books until I was like 18, 19, when like the big Fantagraphics push was happening. So like stuff like Milk and Cheese and all those popular Fantagraphics, the Daniel Klaus books and stuff like that was what I really got into. And then I sort of kind of went backwards. Then I discovered that there was this whole cadre of amazing comic book artists from like the 60s and 70s. And that's the first time I ran into Gary's artwork. So when Bruce told me that he had Gary Dumb, I fanboyed for like probably a month until Gary's finally like, all right, calm down. But it's cool. And it's cool to see how it comes together, because working in nonfiction and fiction books, writing and editing, it's like you try to get the details out there so that the reader can visualize what's happening. You know, you have like this, that the cinematic brain thing happening. But with a comic book, you got to really reel that in, because you want the artist to really bring a lot of that story to the visual aspect. And Bruce and Gary work so well together. It's like Bruce will give him these like stick figure drawings, this idea of like what a panel should kind of look like. And then like Gary takes it and brings it to the content, so that you can read the content and read the words and the conversation and the dialogue and see all this other stuff about the scenery and the way people are. Just all those little visual hints that you don't get in a regular book. So it's really cool to see that come together. And it's even though there's not very many words, it's kind of hard to edit, because I wanted to go, oh, it needs more detail. It needs more detail. I have to be more detailed. But then as soon as the pictures are there, and as soon as Laura added the color, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's like, did we really make this together? It's incredible.
Well, do we have a snark around that you guys could show us?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to make you big. Open that baby up so we can see what we're talking about here.
Well, here, I'll open it to one of the.
Oh, that first panel, the Hollyweed panel is amazing. That looks so cool.
Oh, let's see.
There's a story about Area 51. It's also historical too. You know, there's humor in it. It's historical. It's got science fiction, of course. It deals with social issues. like in that story about Area 51, it also deals with the opioid crisis too. So yeah, the
opening. Oh, yeah, I love that. Hey,
Laura, go ahead and read that whole comic for us.
I'm just trying to get it straight. I feel like a backward person here.
No, yeah, there's a scene in there where it's at Devil's Tower in Wyoming. Oh, I really like the way that came together. That was a real group effort there. I mean, that particular story, don't you think, Gary and Laura and George?
Yeah,
we all contributed a lot to that, because my first idea, it was okay, but it really came together in the group process. Kind of reminds me of like a theater play. Everybody really worked hard on it. And that deals with the first massacre at Wounded Knee. So somebody reading this, like a young person reading this, they're going to get historical content out of this in an entertaining way. And it has social commentary, but not in a heavy-handed way.
I learned a lot from doing this book. So, and I'm an old lady.
How is it being received so far?
I've heard really good things about. I mean, Gary and Laura have been to one Comic-Con already in Cleveland, so they can tell about that maybe.
How did it go with Snark at the Comic-Con?
Oh no, it was good. I've also been to a couple of comic shops and got them to buy some copies of Snark. But I don't know how the sales are, but I'll know better when I go back if they want some more.
Right. Yeah, I was in Ohio. I didn't get up to Cleveland. I was visiting my sons in Toledo and in Dayton. But I went to probably 10 different comic book shops between the two cities. And everybody was very excited. As soon as I walked in, as soon as I showed it to them, and I said, Gary Dum, that's when, you know, there's a couple of the younger comic book shop owners who didn't necessarily know who you were, but they looked at the art and they knew this is really good stuff. And it kind of it's a style that is, you can tell that Gary has been illustrating for a long time. And it's a very unique style. And it's the modern day comics are a little bit, I don't even know how to describe, how would you describe them? You can look at
a
it.
A little stylized. Would you say stylized? I don't think Gary's work is stylized. I think
it's not stylized. It's very clean.
No, it's very real.
Yeah. And it's very approachable. And I love it. I love his style. Somebody said something about Ray Hernandez. Have you ever? I've heard of him before, haven't you? Somebody mentioned his name as a similar style, but one of the comic book shop owners. But anyway, they were very excited about it, and one of them bought extra copies, you know, and for himself. And one comic book shop has a podcast, and he did an on-the-spot interview with me when I was there. So it just, everybody was very receptive, very, very receptive. So, and I think George, you've had good experiences up there in Seattle too, right?
Yeah, so far it's been pretty good. Yeah, people, they're like, again, you just say, oh, this is a collaboration work with Gary Dum. They're like, either if they don't know who he is, they're like totally enamored when they find out, like, oh, awesome. And if they do know who he is, like, oh my God, really? He's doing comic books. This is awesome. So it's definitely a good people know who he is, and I think Ray Hernandez was similar. I think you can see a lot of influence from Gary's style in all those comic books that came after him. Like you see that in Hernandez's, and you also see it like in Daniel Klaus's a little bit, and you see that kind of like style. Even Daniel Klaus's Ghost World is almost pretty much kind of like a version of American Splendor in a weird way, is what I always
say as. In a
way. Yeah.
Hey, Lauren, this is Bogart.
Oh, hello.
And he is Gary's artistic assistant. Bo is with Gary all the time in his studio, so.
He's the only one allowed in the studio, right? Just Bogart.
He basically, is Gary's number one.
Oh.
And we have nine. Oh my God.
So I was going to say, George, you when you approached the Fantagraphics people, they were interested right away, right? I mean, that was
And I said, it was Gary Dunn. They're like, awesome indie comic book. We love it.
Yeah.
Speaking of indie comic books, they
say something like, is he still alive?
Nobody said that yet.
No. Nobody said
that. Speaking of indie side of things, I carry up correctly because, I mean, working together, and both of them were young, but I mean, working together, Harvey would write such long stories and then hand it to Gary with a little, like you said, a little love stick figure this big, you know, and Gary would then be able to kind of work with that. So when you start with learning from somebody that does so much words and very little space for pictures, he learned the correct way, I think.
Hey, Bruce, well, the way I generally posit it is when I worked with Harvey, most of the time, it was like trying to put 10 pounds in a 5-pound bag. So in terms of there being some space with working with you, I say, hallelujah, brother.
Okay. All right, good. Yeah. Go ahead.
What production looks like when it comes to producing an indie comic, because you're obviously all in different areas. You're having to send things to each other. How do you actually pull it all together to produce the book, and where do you have it printed?
Thank God for the internet, I guess.
Yeah. We're all, I mean, we send, I mean, if you can look back for Snark, just this one issue of Snark, I don't know how many emails I have from everybody, from Laura, from Gary, from George. There is literally hundreds and hundreds of emails that we were exchanging ideas and rough drafts and you know, it was a lot of, there's a lot of communication going on. And it starts with just a rough draft, a sketch I do of each page. My stories in Snark are about 4 to 5 pages, the way I kind of envision it. And I'll just handwrite them and draw them in my crude drawing style. And I'll send it to George and I'll send it to Gary. And they'll take a look at it and they offer suggestions. And then Gary does some rough, I guess you call them thumbnails, you know.
About 2 inches by 3 inches.
Yes. So
and he's always worked that way.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful way to work. And then, you know, George comments on it and Laura comments on it, and she doesn't just do color, she also takes a look at what we're doing along the way. And
but you guys are experts at that. No, I just kind of try to stick with the color, because
I heard Gary say, well, Laura really likes this one, so that means that's a valuable comment based on your experience. So anyway, so that's how we do it, just back and forth, and then Gary gets the, the panels in a, you know, kind of a rough, I guess you call it a rough then, idea for each page. And, we check it again, 2 and 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, make sure that all the, proper names are spelled correctly and all that stuff. And the editing process, even though there's not a lot of words, like a novel or something, it's still very critical, because if you only have, like, you know, 20 words on a page or less, and you make a mistake, it really sticks out. Unlike a novel, you know, you got so many different words on a page, and you might be able to bury it in there somewhere if you make a little mistake. But in a comic book, it's glaring if you make a grammatical error or a spelling error or something. So it's very, very important. And then we get it to a certain point, and then the process once it's in a kind of a good final stage, then we give it to George and he does his magic with it, puts it together into the, how it's going to be set in the right dimensions. And what do you call it? Not dimensions, but
aspect ratio.
Ginger just came by and told me aspect ratio. I guess that, I don't know if that would be right. That sounds right. Good. Yeah, that sounds good. So, and then, yeah, so that's, and then as far as where we got it printed, there were a lot of options to go to. It's not cheap to print comic books, especially full color comic books on good paper too, which is what we did. And I felt Snark deserved good paper, because that's, most comics today are not on newsprint. There's very few that are on the old newsprint style that I used to buy when I was a kid. So they're all on good paper. So we decided to go, Laura found a printer there in Cleveland called Jack Prints, and we went with them. And the cool thing about it is that because it was right there in Cleveland, we could hold the shipment until Laura and Gary could go in there and sign a bunch of them before they shipped them out here to California. So that
they
was
were kind very of accommodating. Yeah, they were accommodating.
I would say it took from January, from when I got that bust of Snark until, what was it, November when it came out? Yeah. 11 months. Yeah. 11 months to get that issue out. Yeah.
I think I'm getting slower in my old age.
No, it wasn't just you, Gary. It was a lot of hard work. Now the second one I think will probably be a bit easier.
It'll be easier.
Yeah. So now we have it down. And I also wrote up and I shared with them a codex or something of Snark, you know, the whole idea of what, you know, what the larger story is going to be and all the special things that are going to happen. So I did that. Do they call that a story Bible or a, I don't know. I mean, there's different words for it, but yeah, there's a lot of adventures to come. So I've written another 15, 16 stories. So there's enough for, you know, several more issues, or maybe we'll do a graphic novel version of Snark next. I don't know. We haven't decided yet.
So is the next one going to be 80 pages?
Is it going to be what?
80 pages.
You said, is the next one going to be 80 pages?
80 pages. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I love just doing regular comic book, but maybe it'll be a king-size comic book.
Remember what is that?
King size comic books.
80 pages.
Oh, 80 pages.
Yeah. Is that for a graphic novel? 80 pages is the minimum? Is that what it is?
It's in terms of printing. 80 pages is the minimum for a square bound.
Oh, you're right. For a perfect bound?
Right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, so I got to decide that. And, you know, I'll confer with the Snark team and see what their thoughts are on it. Yeah. You know, and
now will you also be reproducing this through I think Kindle does a comic book format as well for like online e-reading?
George, you can address that.
Yeah, it's through the digital version's available through Comixology, which is basically the Kindle version of comics that they're owned by Amazon and everything, so they're just sort of and it really took them a long time to review.
Yes.
Comic book, though, it took like months, which I'm not used to that. I'm used to a whole book being reviewed and accepted or rejected within like, you know, I think it's like 48 or 72 hours. But
it was the comic like a month.
Longer. I think it was like almost 2 months, wasn't it? It was crazy. Yeah,
November, we gave it to them, and it just now, like a week ago, came out on Comixology.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So the both versions are available, and I think that eventually Amazon's planning on kind of putting those together like they did with KDP and CreateSpace and to make it a little easier. Cause it's still, there's a lot of bugs. It's still very new and it's not very user friendly, but I think it'd be a good tool and it keeps you from, I think it invites more comic enthusiasts to digital comics because it's not so book and Kindle and it's not really Amazon oriented. They don't even really mention Amazon in any of their press or anything like that. So the process was cool, and they have a really good you can fill out profiles for everybody that participated in the comic book, and then like Gary's able to link all of the work that he's done that's digital to his profile and to his other pieces of artwork and his other books and stuff. So it's really cool. It could be a really good resource for digital comic book artists, I think.
Now, are you saying that
Does stuff with Comixology. That's sort of the first choice, I think, of a lot of people nowadays.
Right.
So yeah. You're finding that a lot of people are adapting to the digital reading style rather than having that physical comic book in their hand?
Well, that's what, you know, I've done a lot of reading and research on it, and there's a transition going on, but there's a lot of people who love, myself included, who love to have a book in their hands, whether it's a comic book or a book, you know. So I think it's good to offer both. And of course it has a nice price break, you know, the digital comics, Snark is $1.99 as a digital comic book, which is about as, I don't think there are too many cheaper ones than that, is there, George? I think that's a very good price.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the average.
And then yeah. The print copy is $3.50, which is less than most Marvel comics now, which I think are $3.99. So when I first started buying comics, they were 12 cents.
Yeah. 10 cents.
10 cents. Okay, you're right. Golden age. 10 cents. Yeah.
Hey, Don Bobo. I love the history aspect of it. I like that we're kind of that we incorporate current issues and topics, but not in a preachy political way. It's just more right. of like, here's an eye into what the characters that are in the comic book are seeing. Here's what their different views are. And it's kind of, I like that because it lets the reader fill in those blanks of like, what do they think is right or wrong? Or, oh, I didn't know about that. I'm sure a lot of people have no idea about I can't remember the name of it. Is this not Segura, the one about the bear in the first one?
Oh, Matotopia. Or the Devil's Tower, yeah.
Yeah, that's great because it really brings together like people that respect nature and maybe have a bit of a connection to the land and those people that are just like driving by to have a look or like, oh, I need to climb this mountain because that's what we do, you know. Yeah. So I really like that. But it's not presented in that way like this is good and this is bad. It's presented and here's these people that are interacting and this is really what happens on a daily basis to people.
Like if Laura, if you have a copy of the comic book, that one page, which I think Gary did such a great job illustrating about the border crisis. We even talk about the border crisis, but we do it in a way that's not too heavy handed. I don't know if you can find that page, but to show it, where Snark and his companion, the Cosmic Staff, who's kind of the comic relief for the whole comic book. You always need humor. There's a lot of humor in Snark too, but yeah. Where he approaches the border and he's looking at the fence. I think it's that the top panel on the second page there. I don't know if you can see that, but Snark very innocently asks, I wonder if this fence is meant to keep people in or keep them out. You know, so it's just something for people to think about. You know, we're not like preaching at people that, you know, you got to build a wall, tear down a wall. It's just, you know, let's think about the, what is this thing?
Just the facts.
It just, yeah, he's observing as an alien, you know, as an innocent, you know, person just trying to see what's going on.
Yeah,
that is a good story. They're all good stories.
I'm kind of at the point where I'm not really in observer mode anymore, where I am starting to preach at people because it's like, you know what, this whole giving people things to think about thing, it doesn't seem to be working all that well all the time. I mean, it seems like people aren't really using their heads all that much today.
Well, that's the point. The thing is, yeah, you can see these things, but if you're not practicing using your head, it's lost on you.
Yeah. Well, and I adopt the same style in my teaching, you know, because I teach U.S. history, modern U.S. history. And, you know, I have people of all political persuasions in the class, and I present things in a non-biased way, but yet I also will answer questions. You know, if they say, well, what do you think about this? I will present it, but I don't like teach them like this is what you have to believe, but maybe here are some aspects of what's going on that maybe you didn't think of, or the historical background to it that maybe you didn't understand the context of it. And that's kind of how I present it. And that's that's the way you have to teach, because otherwise you lose maybe half of the people and they're not listening, they're tuning out. And it's very difficult to, you know, it's harder and harder to do, because you're right, it is very polarized right now in America. And people tune each other out. And
I think that learning is something at least it seems to me like that people don't really want to do anymore. It's really easy to read a post somewhere or a funny meme, and I love funny memes. I'm not dogging on you meme people, and decide, hey, I like that statement. This is what I'm going to build my system of beliefs around, instead of learning as much as you can about both sides. I mean, when I was 20 years old, I was a very, very different person than I am today. And I've said and done some things that, I mean, I can't take back, but I look back, I'm like, wow, you were an idiot, man. You know, you had so much learning that you needed to do in your life. And it seems like people have stopped doing that. And I think that we can't stop doing that. We have to keep learning. Otherwise, this society is never going to move beyond this really kind of crappy state that we're in right now, at least here in America. Is everybody in America that we're talking to today? I believe so, right?
I think we have.
So you're all in the same boat with me then. Yeah, we have got to be better than we are now and get out of this. So, I mean, people have just, I think that if we can keep learning and things like, you know, a comic book, like you guys are doing with Snark, I think that you're exactly right. You're giving people things to think about, but if their minds are closed to that kind of thinking, then they're not going to get anywhere. And it's like, how do we get people to open their minds back up to learning?
Yeah, question everything, I think. You know, just question things. Like if you come up against something that you don't really believe in, ask a few questions and maybe that will, you know, teach you something new. I don't know.
Well, I like to tell my students that you're not learning unless you're uncomfortable. If you're comfortable, you're exactly not really learning. And you have to learn to deal with being uncomfortable in life and dealing with that and you know, making do and doing what you can. And that's, I tell them day one, you know, something we're going to be dealing with is probably going to make you feel uncomfortable. And I tell them, but that is how you learn. I mean, I don't go out of my way to make them feel uncomfortable, but I'm not afraid to talk about any issue that's going on or anything in the past. And they respond well to that, I think. And I have a lot of confidence in young people. You know, most of my students are 18 or 24. And I do have a lot of confidence in them, but they have a lot of challenges ahead. I mean, it's kind of messed up right now, as we all know. And they got some work to do when they get into positions of leadership. And whatever we can do, you know, as teachers or comic book writers or artists or editors or novelists, whatever we can do to help these young people prepare is, you know, we have to do our best to you know, to get them ready. Yeah. And right. They have challenges, unbelievable challenges ahead of them. If you just talk about the environment, you know, there's just one huge challenge that they have.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so glad that I grew up when I grew up, because I don't know how I would be able to deal with being a young person in today's world. You're right. It's very, very hard, I think.
That's what I like about, and what is so insidious about a comic book, because it is so non-elitist that it slips under the door.
Yeah.
It's as though the guard is left down against a lot of the stuff, Jason, that you're talking about, that it can at least get in there as long as they can read and they like to look at pictures, whether they're dirty pictures or not.
And she had a little girl who was like 7 and a half. And of course, when Gary started talking, you know, she was a little bit freaked out. But, you know, the more that we talked, she wasn't too sure about me or him because we were older. But then I said, you know, Gary draws comics. Her eyes just lit up and she went, really? And all of a sudden, you know, she was interested because that's something she could relate to. So I think that what you just said is probably very true.
Yeah.
It's a common denominator.
And I asked her if she ever watched Doctor Who on TV, because Doctor Who is the only imitation that I can do now since my operation. And unfortunately, she said no, she didn't. I did my imitation of a Dalek.
Well, give us an exterminate.
Exterminate.
Oh, I love it.
But still, I do think that comics, even though they are in our world lowbrow art, you know, in the snooty art world, but I think that they are so much more. I think that they are kind of a uniter.
Well, yeah, and they're a uniter, and they can also be used as a subversive tool because, like you said, they kind of go under the radar there. Gary, I'm gonna send you those scenes that we talked about from some of the novels I like for you to draw up for me to send back later. It doesn't have to be on the show, but we do have an audience question there. Joe Compton from Go Indie Now, we love Joe, would like to know how George stays so still. Because he asked if you were frozen.
I'm lazy. I'm advanced talents and laziness.
You have been a bit of a statue there. And then I saw your cat in the background just hanging out. I'm like, oh, hi, buddy. See ya.
The cats have taken over the show.
Oh, they really have. Mine abandoned me. I don't know where she went.
I did see a question from a viewer or listener named Mike who wanted to know about older comics. And the best advice I can give him is to go to his local library. Yeah, that's him, Mike. Go to his local library and to borrow a copy of the Overstreet comic book price guide. And then he can take a look himself before he takes him to some comic shop where they offer him a quarter apiece.
Good advice.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
Hello, Bogart.
Oh, hi, Bogart. Hey, buddy. So I have to ask, I know this is off topic for you, Doc, but have you had any new, really interesting paranormal experiences since I talked to you a few months ago?
Because these
are my favorite right here. These are my favorite.
These things are occurring all the time. And I do... at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, take what I call spirit walks or meditative walks, where I can't meditate sitting still, you know, like a lot of people do. They can sit in the lotus position. Well, first of all, I can't sit in the lotus position.
Me neither.
I could probably sit, but I'd probably fall asleep. So when I get that relaxed, so I do walking meditation, and I regularly, you know, contact my spirit guides and those that have departed. And I also have contacted, and it's going to be in that third Timeless book in Timeless Trinity, ancient alien mystic named Anzar. And I'm not making this up. This is what is actually happening. So I have pretty much regular contact with him. And there's
this
some
is not
kind
snark.
Of
snark. This is real.
This is real stuff. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, there's some reality to snark too, and that'll come out later, you know, but, as terms of alien hybrid kind of stuff, but it's fascinating to me. And so I have contact with him. And one of the things he told me recently, which I thought was pretty cool, was that about predictions, you know, because a lot of people who have this contact, you know, and they'll make predictions. And he said, it's better to make preparations than predictions, because preparations are never wrong. Predictions often are. So he gives me a lot of wisdom. There he is. Yeah. He's kind of like a Kachina, yeah, kind of a proto-human looking guy. That's me on my head, upside down, yeah.
Boy, comic book you is pretty good looking.
Yeah, I know, he is. He's that alter ego, you know, I hang on to that desperately as long as I can. But anyway, that's some of the stuff that I've been doing lately. I haven't had any startling things, you know, ghost type things or any of that stuff recently. So, but I'm kind of keeping myself protected from that too at the same time. And a lot of that stuff, you know, you can, I think the most important thing is to learn how to turn it off rather than turn it on. Because when you turn it on, you got to be very, very careful, and it's exhausting, you know, to be contacting or, you know, to go to haunted places and stuff like that. I've had some very bad experiences. I think that we talked about last time we spoke about the stories in Timeless. I think that the main thing for viewers to know is that I believe that the paranormal is normal and the supernatural is natural. And I've thought that since I was a little kid. And I just was, because of my academic position, I came out kind of late as paranormal, you know, was kind of afraid of the reaction I would get from my colleagues and from the administration and at the college. But actually, I think people are ready, and they've been very accepting, and they like to share their own paranormal stories with me. So I think that, yeah, Snark and the Timeless books are all connected in some unusual, strange way. Although one is supposedly fiction, the other nonfiction.
Supposedly. Oh, I like that.
You know, that's, you know, the idea is that I think my friend David Wilson, who was a great Vietnam War poet and writer, he was the author of the REMP series, which I can't really say on this show what REMP stands for in the military. But anyway, it would be X-rated, I think, if I said that. He said he believes that fiction is truer than nonfiction anyway. So, which I think is kind of an interesting idea.
Oh, Mike says his wife and he and his wife have both had paranormal experiences, which is pretty cool. As long as it was hopefully a good experience. But yeah, I find that stuff is so interesting to me. I mean, that's what I think I told you, Doc, that my next book is all about a woman who's a magnet for paranormal experiences. And it's pretty cool stuff because it's all true stuff. And Rebecca says, wait, what did Rebecca say? Souls are infinite. Bodies are finite. They can get drained out pretty quickly when trying to use the infinite.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It is exhausting. But it's, you know, there's a mission behind it. You know, there's a mission behind everything we do. Behind Snark, you know, behind the Timeless books. And it's really to help, as one spirit told me that I communicated with several months ago, said our main purpose on this earth is to help alleviate the suffering of others in whatever way we can. That could be through humor, through entertainment, through, you know, maybe some wisdom or our writing or our kindness every day, you know, whatever that is. So it kind of unites all of us in a mission. And so that's how these things are connected. And as artists and writers, and like many of your viewers probably are writers, based on the name of the show, I think that everybody, you know, pretty much sees that we have this very serious mission to accomplish in the time that we have in this body that we have right now.
That's deep, man. I like
it. It got a little deep, didn't it? Yeah. So we'll see what happens to Snark. You know, he's you know, Snark is very interesting because we don't know a whole lot about him yet. We know a little bit about him, but it's gonna kind of like, you know, layers of an onion. It's gonna come out more like he's a hybrid, right? He's half alien, half human. What's all that about?
Well, I fully expect a drawing from Gary Dumb over there that's gonna end up you coming out as this half alien hybrid. That's what I'm preparing for. Is you to finally come out and say, look, I'm actually Snark. I really am from another planet. And I'm hoping Snark. That happens. That'll make me real happy.
I think poor George would have a heart attack. He's already freaked out by some of the stories.
Oh God, wait till you read the next book. Oh my God, Trinity is amazing. In fact, there's a picture that scares the crap out of me right behind Laura and Gary that every time I see proofs of that picture of the, it's going to be the cover of the next of Trinity. Oh my God, it freaks me out so much every time I see it.
Is it Bruce's author picture? That's not that, is it? That's not very nice, George. Come on.
We're friends, so it's okay. No, he's talking about the reptilian lady.
Oh yeah, yeah, that one. Oh, I can't believe that.
Yeah. She's strangely alluring, but very frightening at the same time.
I like it. That has a real Doctor Whovian or vibe to it. I like it.
Yeah. She's very, very, very powerful, very scary. And she gets what she wants. And you can take that any way you want.
She's that woman. All right.
She is very powerful. Very, very powerful.
That's your birth mother, isn't it, Bruce?
So give us a little tease as we come to the end of the show here of what readers can expect from Snark, current issue, and possibly what's coming out without too many spoilers.
Well, you know, you're going to find out his origins, you know, why, you know, he's this alien human hybrid and the story behind that. More about his mission. His original mission, as stated in Snark 1, is that he's supposed to prepare Earth for colonization by his home planet. But he soon learns that, you know, because he's part human too, I think he decides he wants to help rescue us. So he's got this built-in conflict, but his home planet is also in need of colonization. They need to get off their planet. So we're going to figure out how he's going to solve that dilemma without enslaving all of us, you know, or enslaving himself. But and we're going to meet some very strong female characters in the second issue or continuation of Snark. Like the emperor of his home planet is she is female, and she's a very strong character that will probably frighten George as well.
I scare easily.
I'm looking forward to this because I'm the person that sees everything the last because I do the color. So when everything is already done, I'm putting it together and doing the color. So I kind of read the book then. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to seeing the next one because I really did enjoy putting together the first one.
Well, I love the work that you've done, your color work. Well, I'm so glad that we decided to do full color throughout the whole thing. Awesome. Yeah, it just wouldn't be the same comic without it. It deserved full color. So that's, I think that's very important. Yeah. So, yeah, we got a lot to look forward to in the next, however it comes out, a graphic novel or another floppy, you know, regular comic. I'm not sure how that's going to happen, but we have to get Trinity out next. So that's March 1st.
And you're a busy.
And of course, there's how many, 11 illustrations in interiors?
12.
12. 12 interior illustrations.
Getting better. Don't you think they get better?
Well, each time we work together, I think his illustrations are always great, but it seems like the mind meld is even deeper now. And he's interpreting exactly what I'm writing about and what I'm feeling about these characters and these in the case of Timeless, you know, these real things that are happening. And I think that's what makes it extra frightening is how realistic it is. In a way, it seems fantastical, but there's an element of shocking realism to it too that maybe people don't want to think about, but they're going to have to. It's kind of like if you looked at the cover of Whitley Strieber's Communion, most people, what freaked them out was the cover. You know, that's what caught them was the cover. And we had different ideas for this cover, but that experience that I had with that reptilian lady is what Gary latched onto right away. He said, no, that's the cover right there. So he convinced me that, no, you should go with that. I think it'll have a big impact.
Also, I think I just wanted to add that the way Bruce writes and I mean,
I like that.
And writing and artwork is definitely a personal thing. So it's like Gary and Bruce are like sharing their emotions, being really raw and real with their artwork, and then like to see that come together, and then like I feel like I have to like sort of distance myself a little bit from the emotional aspect of what they're writing and drawing to kind of sort of like manage everything to put together so that it's like it's such it's so realistic that it's not. I mean, Bruce said it's fantastical. The content is, but the way it's presented is like is. I mean, Bruce writes literature. The way he presents this, these fantastical stories is fact based and not like I'm special or this amazing thing. It's like you're right there with them and you're feeling the fear or the elation that he's feeling. So it really comes across with the pictures in Snark. It's like it comes together. It's bigger than the sum of its parts.
Well, I appreciate that, George. And I do feel that connection with Gary, our work together. And that's why I think this book did, he outdid himself. I mean, this is really something. So, and it's a nice companion piece to people, you know, get Snark, get the Timeless Trinity Timeless Trinity and, you know, collect that Gary Dumb art.
books
and comics.
We just all have to pee, that's all. We're not relaxed, we just have to pee.
Well put. Very nice.
Well, I really, Casey, I think we're about at the end of our time tonight, aren't we?
The end of our rope.
yes. Oh, she's talking to somebody. Who are you talking to, Katie?
Sorry, kids are trying to like horn in on the mic here and the camera.
Oh. All right, kids and cats, all good.
Well, it's been really good talking to you all.
Kids and cats. Yeah, there we go.
See, it's kids time now.
Yeah. Thank you, Katie. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you guys very much for being here today. And what a wonderful talk you guys have given us. You can feel the passion in the project that you guys have put together. So I personally can't wait to take a look at it. I'm excited to read it. And cool. I think members of our audience as well.
Good. Good. Awesome. Very good. Yes. Thank you all. And thank you, audience, too, for listening.
Thanks.
We'll see you guys next week with another episode of Spilling Ink. Be sure to hit the like and subscribe button. If you're on our YouTube channel, definitely hit that like button. It helps with the algorithms. And we will be back next week with more people to introduce you to and more fun conversation. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.